There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the First and Gold podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined by Sim Longa. And Sim, it was a disappointing game over the weekend. And I say disappointing, obviously, because Purdue lost the game. But, you know, I'm never one to really, you know, try to take away, you know, any losses and be like, well, they kind of won because they did this. Like, at the end of the day, you either win or you lose. It feels like there was a lot to take away from this game in a positive way, a lot to be excited about. You know, you make a couple of plays go your way and, you know, it's a whole different story. I think to both you and Dustin's credit, when we did the preview podcast, you guys said that regardless of the outcome, that fans are going to come away feeling good about this team and feeling excited about this team. And even though they lost 33-17 over the weekend, I think you guys are spot on that, you know, there's still a lot to be excited about with this team.
Yeah, man, I think that that was the first game that I've left in a while where I was mad, but, like, mad in the way of, like, damn it, we were so close. Like, you know, you know that there's, like, a handful of plays where, like, if they go our way, we might win. And so while I was trying to, you know, obviously deal with just the anger of losing, because I hate losing, you know, why lose when you could win? I felt good because I was like, man, okay, this, you know, we stepped up, the level of competition stepped up, and to an extent, we answered the call on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. Yes, you know, we're gonna get into it. You know, you can't turn the ball over, and defensively, yeah, you need to be able to, you know, get more push up front, be able to try to, you know, a couple opportunities at turnovers. You need to be able to cash one of those in, but, you know, all things aside, like, that performance was very much so. I think it was what a lot of us were looking for in terms of just being competitive, being there in the, like, to a point where we were there in the fourth quarter. You had a chance. So yeah, it was good. Yeah, like I said, I hate losing and I hate the fact that we lost because I was like, oh man, we're just gonna always talk about wins on these recap episodes. But no, man, it was yeah. There's still a lot of positive to take out of it. And like you said, like, you don't want to be, you know, living in moral victory land. You don't want to be living on that. But again, like, based on what our expectations have been of this team, I think what you saw on Saturday was still something you can take away some good from and be, have a positive outlook on what can happen the rest of the year.
Yeah, 100%. And it was just kind of, I don't want to say weird game, but, you know, you're thrown off with a 3-hour plus delay to start. So, you know, that just kind of throws a wrench into everything. And it really seemed like Purdue was never really able to get into any kind of real flow. And I'm not blaming, like, the weather delay or anything on that, because both teams, you know, had to deal with that. But it just kind of seemed like it kind of threw Purdue off a little bit. I think it definitely threw the crowd off some, which I thought was going to be like a major advantage. And it ended up kind of neutralizing almost. Now, to a lot of the fans' credit, I think the announced attendance from the start was like just over 58,000. So, you know, all things considered, it still was a really neat crowd. You end up being under the lights. But it just kind of seemed like it kind of took some of the momentum leading up into the game, and kind of took some of the air out of that. And Sim, you can probably speak to this a little better being at Rossade, but just from watching the game, it seemed like what kind of was going to be a major advantage for the Boilermakers kind of got neutralized.
Yeah, I think that, I think I said this actually, I think during the preview episode about how I thought that the game would have, it was a 3:30 game, but my thought was that it was going to have 7:30 game energy. Like it was going to feel like it was a night game. And you know what I say, you know, there's, you know, something about a night, there's something about a night game at Rossade. And I didn't realize I was kind of speaking that into fruition, but yeah, I think that if the game had started at the you know at the scheduled time, I think that you know that Rossade is properly filled out and it's a lot louder in there. I'm not necessarily going to say that necessarily swings the way the game goes, but obviously you know to have that energy there, you know, for like you said, the attendance is showing at just over 58,000. You know that, but I can by the time the game started, I don't think there was 58,000 people who were in there. I do think it did have some impact, and it probably does because even just the whole way that that the game started, like you know, like they didn't even run out properly, you know, like you know they didn't get introduced kind of the way they usually do, where they run out and you know they kind of have their have their time, and we as fans get loud as shit in there. It just kind of was like, hey, they came out, they had to do their warm ups, they huddled up, and then they all ran, but they were already on the field, so it was kind of like, all right, it was a very like odd way to watch a game start. It was at the Virginia Tech game, was it like 2 years ago, where we had they had the huge storm that rolled through. I imagine it was probably similar to that when it restarted. I don't know, because I left, because you know 7.5 hours, I need 7 hours to get back home. But yeah, I do feel like that crowd piece, it is one of those parts of it where I'm like, man, well, I wonder how this game goes if it starts on time and everyone's there, you know, because it like even when I got to Purdue and I got to Park, you know, it was about an hour and some change before the game started, and you kind of feel a buzz in the air, you know, you could feel a buzz in the air where I usually go and park at. It was like the lot was closed, so I had to go to another entrance, so I was like, damn, all right, like there's some people here, but obviously you have a 3.5, 3 hour and 5 minute wait. Yeah, some things will change. Some people who were drinking, your drinks probably hit a little harder than you thought. You know, maybe you needed to go take a nap by the time 6:45 rolled around, which I'm not going to hate on. You know, we were college kids once upon a time. So,
yeah, it just seemed odd. But either way, it doesn't take a genius to understand how Purdue lost this game. And with the final score being 33-17, and then USC score points off of turnovers is 17-0 in favor of USC. So, you know, I'm no math major, but if you wipe that out, Purdue wins the game. Right. And those three turnovers were just,
they were killers. Like
three kick to the nuts turnovers, just gut punching, like just deflating, you know, three turnovers in the red zone. So worst case, you're looking at 9 points from those three, and then one of those being a pick six. So that's, you know, worst case, a 10-point swing. Man, it just three really bad throws at the worst opportune times.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's really, I'd say it's two bad throws. I would say, honestly, I would actually say it's one bad throw. I think one poor decision, because on the pick six, I think Ryan Brown needs to just eat that and just go down. It's a sack. Hey, all right, fine. You know, pressure was coming at his face and he was falling backwards as he threw it. It got batted, and then obviously, you know, it's a pick. I think one bad throw, you know, the first one he had in the end zone, you know, you and I were talking before we started recording, like I would have liked to see him keep it himself and try to, and you know, he would have had to make a guy miss, but like I would have liked to see him do that, just kind of running to your left with the receiver running to the right, so you're trying to throw it to the right. That's a That's not the easiest throw to make, even from the as short a distance as it was, given it was like a goal to go situation. And then the last play, as much, I don't think it was necessarily a poor throw as I think it actually was probably a more so a better play by the safety on a USC. I mean, he clearly knew what was going to happen based on what had happened prior in the game, where, you know, Brown goes for that handoff, and if he pulls, Harry's probably going to be looking to the left. He read it, he diagnosed it, made, you know, put himself in position to make a play, and then made a play. It's the fact that they're all in the red zone. Like you said, they just, those are turnovers that take points, that take the opportunity for points out of the way. And when you are a team who arguably is less talented than your opponent, your margin for error is so much smaller. And so, like, while you probably could have survived one of those, at best, maybe two, three turnovers, that's just asking a lot. It's asking a lot, especially then too, when you're talking about your defense, who we're still waiting on to get a turnover, and kind of had some issues of their own in terms of being able to get to the quarterback, and at times get off the field. It's like, man, you really have to make sure that you're buttoned up and that you're valuing ball security. But I will say, because you and I have to talk about this, it's Ryan Brown's fifth start, and if these are the growing pains that he has to go through, so that way, you know, 4, 5, 6, hell, even as early as next week, because ideally, yes, next week, you know, he's smarter with the ball. If he has to go through a game like this to get sharper and get better, where his decision-making is better, you know, and for him to evolve as a quarterback, we can look back at this game, and while it might piss us off, still realize, like, all right, but, like, in the greater scheme of things, that was kind of the day when he kind of turned it around. He started to really understand, like, yeah, I have to be better. I have to be better. The competition elevated. I have to elevate my game, my decision-making as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point to highlight with it being his fifth start of the year. And, you know, when you look at his numbers in a grand scheme of things, like, Sim, if I told you that Ryan Brown was going to throw for 305 yards and score two, you know, or, you know, run one in and throw one, you're probably like, okay, cool. Like, you know, with the defense that USC has, I think you would take that all the time. So, you know, he made some really good plays. But to your point, like, he's got to just be smarter in the red zone. And he knows that, you know, to his credit, you know, and I think it was Coach Odom that said, you know, nobody's tougher on themselves than he is. So, you know, he's going to go back and look, and, you know, now you just want to see him learn from these.
Right. I imagine he wants each one of those throws back. Like, I imagine he wants each one of them back, knowing, damn it, I shouldn't have, or damn, I should have done this. You know what I mean? Like, I imagine he wants each one of those throws back. So, yeah, I agree. I when Odom said that about, like, no one's harder on him than himself, I believe that fully. Ryan Brown's always struck me as a guy who's like a gamer. You see his passion and stuff on the sidelines, even in game. I know that as much as it bothered us, it bothered him probably, you know, 10 times as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, that's just kind of the next step. And it's kind of the next step, not only for him, but it's like the next step for this team too, is like, how now does this team respond? And we'll talk about it in much more detail when we preview this game against Notre Dame. But for Ryan specifically, like, that's going to be where all eyes are going to be on now. Cause, you know, he's shown that, and the offense has shown that they can move the ball. Like, that was a really good defense that they went up against, and they went up and down the field toe to toe with them. But now, can you take the next step? And when you get in the red zone, can you take care of the ball? Can you make winning plays in the red zone? Right. And so that's what, you know, we're really going to want to see now, is can he take that next step? And part of that too, Sim, I just got to get this off my chest, because I did not understand it at the time. I still don't understand it. Part of it is the play calling. I think if you talk to Coach Henson, if he wants one play call back, it was the play bringing in Malachi's and letting him run one offensive play. And, you know, I'm a big Malachi fan. And if you want to run a package with him specifically in the red zone, I'm okay with that. But running him out for one play, and I think it was a second down play.
Yeah, the second down.
And then
Brown came back in for 30.
And was that when he threw the interception after that?
I actually think it was. I think it was too. The pick was on third down because I was thinking like, hey, just don't turn it over. Mm-hmm. You can kick a field goal.
Yeah, so. Like if you want to run some stuff for him, I think there's potential there. But you got to give him either more of a chance or let him throw the ball to keep the defense honest. Like, you can't bring him in for one play, have him run it, and then take him out of the game. I didn't like that call. It felt forced at the time. I don't know. It just, you got to be better, especially in the red zone. And like I said, like, if you want to use him, make sure it's a few plays and let him air one out too, just to keep the defense honest. But I didn't like that call at all down in the red zone.
Yeah, it was an interesting twist. I will say it was, I was a little surprised when he came in. And like you said, if he comes in and all he does is run, to me, like you said, I imagine they probably have, maybe they have a package. They have, you know, they have a handful of plays. But to me, I'm like, if you're going to do that, I'm like, well, do it on first down and give him first and second down. So that way you have a couple plays, like you said, where one of them, maybe he can throw it. Because if you're going to bring him in and every time you bring him in, he's going to run it, then that's just tipping other, you know, opposing defenses off to knowing, hey, whenever Singleton's in the game, they're probably going to run it. So, you know, let's stack the box, you know. So yeah, that was one odd moment. It's obviously, I don't think either of us are sitting here saying that, hey, that cost you Purdue. It was just something that I definitely noticed. And I was like, huh, like, I hope that if they do that again, you know, he gets a couple more plays. Because yeah, I think if you're going to do that, you need to maintain the threat to the defense that, like, no, we have a new guy in, and yes, he might be the better runner, but we'll also let him throw this thing as well.
No, I agree. And one last thing on the offense before we kind of switch gears and talk about the defense a little bit, Simon, I think you're in agreement with me on this. I think the biggest bright spot from this game was the play from the wide receivers. Yes. You know, and you're still missing, you know, wide receiver one on the depth chart. Obviously he hasn't played yet, Nylon Morissette. And you've got some guys who are really starting to emerge as playmakers out there, whether it's Michael Jackson, Nitro made some big plays. EJ Horton was really good. And, you know, Ahmad Branch didn't have the big plays. And I know he got poked in the eye and missed some time. But, you know, he was still that threat and, you know, still had a couple of nice, you know, had two catches for 35 yards. So he's still making plays when you get the ball in his hands. But I was really, really impressed with the wide receivers. And I know the USC wide receivers made, you know, a couple of plays where you're like, damn. But I feel like all in all, like the Purdue wide receivers really held their own and really came out super impressed with how they played.
Yeah, man. No, I agree. George Burnham too. You know, he had four receptions. Like you said, like guys were able to win. They were able to win their matchups and get open. There's a reason. Yeah, there's a reason why, you know, Ryan Brown's it throws for 305 yards. You know, guys were getting open, and for them to have that performance despite some of the struggles you saw with that O line, That's really impressive. And like you said, like EJ Horton came in the game and he immediately started getting active. I was like, oh, hell yeah. And I think Armand Branch, he's just kind of had a rough go of it the last couple of weeks, because was it last week he had the hamstring injury that like kind of took him out of the took him out, I think, like the second quarter. And he was kind of, I think they might have monitored his snaps after that. And then he comes in and this week, I think he had back-to-back catches, or he had a catch, and on that catch, that's where he got poked in the eye, and so then he has to go out of the game. And then EJ Horton came in right after that, and again, that's when EJ Horton started to get working as well. And I thought Nitro Tuggle had a really good game in terms of just, you can see him becoming more comfortable. So you have a good situation, I would say, on your hands with the receiving core. When that, like you said, you have 3-4 guys at the wideout position, and you're missing more set. But you have four guys who you can really look to and be like, yeah, these are guys who I can go to. And the more options a guy has, the harder you are to defend, because we were able to move the ball on USC. I mean, yes, they have a stout front four, but like we were still able to move the ball. And that, again, that just encourages you going forward.
Yeah. And to your point, you have Michael Jackson III was 7 for 70 yards, EJ Horton with 5 for 70 yards, and Nitro Tuggle had 4 for 69 yards. Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. Can't remember a time where Purdue had 3 receivers have dang near 70 yards each receiving. It's probably been a while. I thought that was just super encouraging to see those guys play and really hold their own and play well and make some plays for Ryan Brown there. Now, Sim, let's kind of flip it over and talk about the defense, because we talked about some of the concerns for the defense on the preview pod. And I think when we had Dustin on, he brought up a really interesting point, you know, in relation to the turnovers, and how, you know, that's sometimes not necessarily like a big area of focus. And that can kind of lead to like some big plays type thing. It's still an area of concern for me, but at some point you almost got to kind of take it for what it is. Like, still, this defense played really damn well. They held USC to 26 points on offense. This was an offense that was coming in averaging over 60 points a game, over 65, I think, per game. We talked about it, like USC's quarterback, for my money, is one of the top quarterbacks in the Big Ten. And Purdue, like, the defense at the end of the day, man, they held their own. And while they didn't make a couple of plays, you know, you think back to the plays, I think it was actually 2 plays in a row, the drop interceptions, you would have really liked to see, like, at the end of the day, they did enough to put us in a spot to win the game. And in a game against USC, that's really all you can ask for.
Yeah, I think that the defense did a good job of not allowing USC to get away from us. You know, those, like you said, those, you know, those 3 turnovers on offense, they hurt, because, you know, they lead to 17 points. But despite that, you know, we were sitting there in the fourth, Purdue having a chance with the ball, driving. I think we even talked about it too. It was actually late in the third. They were down, they were down 23-10, and they were driving. So, but even still, even before, you know, Brown throws the last pick, you know, you have a chance. You're still in it. And a lot of that is a good deal of that, it speaks to how well the defense has been playing. Again, there's things, just like with the offense, there's things with the defense that you would like for them to clean up. You know, the allowing them to go 4 for 4 on fourth down, not great, but they were 4, but USC was also 4 of 13 on third down. So clearly, you know, we were making them really have to earn it. It wasn't like they were just moving up and down the field on us. And you look at that offense, they have a lot of good skill guys. And despite that, yeah, like the defense was making plays, keeping guys in front of them. And yeah, it's unfortunate that it didn't it's unfortunate that obviously, yeah, that they weren't able to kind of generate more tackles for losses, more sacks, a turnover or two. It's unfortunate they weren't able to, but all that aside, they still, like you mentioned, they still only gave up 26 points to an offense that was averaging over 60 points a game going into it. And we had said, before the game about how USC was going to have to, like, their in terms of the Purdue defense was going to be a step up for USC and versus what they have, seen to this point in the year. I don't even know. I mean, it's like I knew they could do that, what they did, on Saturday, but it was like, I was unsure if they would actually do it. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I was, so I it's still, I still, even with the defense, I look, came away from that and I was like, all right, cool. There's very much so something to work with here. We definitely have, a solid defense. I think it's fair to say that's a solid defense. 'Cause when that USC offense, when it's clicking, it's clicking. And there were times where, whether it's Mekhi Lemon or Jacoby Lane, Wayman Jordan, or even Eli Sanders, there were times, and then obviously Jaden Maiva, there were times where they were just making plays because they're just skilled guys, and sometimes like better talent is just gonna, you're just gonna make plays. But we had answers for them, able to get them off the field, able to get stops, and keep the offense in it to a stand up, like in the sense of like, yo, if you can get a score here, we get a stop, get another score, hey, we're right back in this. Because I still believe that without those three turnovers, I think that Purdue has a chance in the fourth where they probably have the ball and they're driving to possibly put the game away.
Yep.
And
No,
I mean, again,
I'm
that's
right
a
there with
credit
you.
to the defense, because the defense, they didn't throw three picks, respectfully.
Yeah. And to your point, there was a few plays where it was like, all right, bro, like Jaden would just drop back and throw one up, and wide receivers, and it was multiple guys, would go up and just make a play, one-handed grabs, like. There was definitely like you could definitely tell that those dudes could play. And they made a few, for lack of a better term, backyard type plays where Jaden was just like, screw it, I'm throwing it up there and I'm gonna let my guy go get it. And credit to him, they went up there and they got it. But all in all, like looking at the totality from this game, like the defense held their own, man. And shout out to Miles Slusher, and Charles Correa. Miles finished with 12 tackles, and Charles with 11. Each were career highs for them. And they talked about it a little bit on the broadcast, but it did really feel like Charles was just all over the place. I thought that he played a really good game. I thought that Manny Powell played a really good game. He made some plays when we really needed him to. I can probably guarantee you he wants the drop interception back because he made just a great read on it.
Yeah, man.
He did everything right. To your point, Sim, I'm going to steal your line. He did everything right but make the play at the end. I thought that Manny played well. I thought the defensive line played well. They didn't get to the quarterback, but I think they generated enough pressure when they needed to. And even if they didn't make like plays, I think they cleared space so the linebackers could make some plays. It was just a game where we were unsure kind of what we were going to get with the defense, based off the opponents and who they've played. You're like, well, they played Ball State and FCS school. Are they really that good? And I don't think there's any reason to be discouraged from how they played. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say like they're like the best defense in the Big Ten. But to your point, they kept us in the game, which was one thing we really lacked last year and makes a world of difference. And then I hope I'm not jinxing this at all, but they just play really disciplined ball too. They just seem really well coached, and seem to, you know, just be at the right place. And you know, there's effort there. They all gang tackle when they need to. You don't see a lot of blown coverages or things like that. Like, they're just a sound defensive unit through 3 weeks.
Yeah, nope. I would agree. I mean, I think there's, again, like, I think there were a few times where there were only a few times where I can remember where they kind of seemed like they didn't know what they were doing. And I think, oddly enough, a couple of them happened during fourth downs where, you know, you could see some substitutions, but you saw guys who were like looking at the sidelines, like, wait, what are we doing? What are we doing? But for the most part, like you said, you know, it seems like a very disciplined, well-coached defense where guys understand what they're supposed to do. You know, guys are, you know, we're flying to the ball. Yeah, like you said, that the Manny Powell, like, and I believe it was Miles Slusher who had the opportunity, I think a play or two before Manny Powell did, but they did the right things in terms of they read the play, diagnosed it, you know, like to diagnose the play, read it, made a move on the, like, made a play on the ball, but just weren't able to kind of, you know, cap it off. And I think the difference between what we currently are as a defense and where we can get to is when guys start completing that. You know, that's what I was saying, kind of the difference between us and then what happened with USC is that when we had the opportunity to take the ball away, we didn't. But when they did, they did. And those are the little things that can add up in a big way. Because even if, like, you know, they don't get those and then, you know, USC just kicks the field goal, it's like, well, if you take the ball away, they don't get anything. So, but yeah, all in all, man, you still come away from this game knowing that, like, okay, this Purdue defense actually it will present its fair share of problems. And you know, Dustin pointed out, like, well, you know, despite the fact that they haven't, you know, caused a turnover, they're still they're still cutting people's water off. And so, you know, we were talking about this before recorded. Now it makes you think, well, what happens when we do start, like, generating turnovers? You know, like, is this going to be something where, like, you get one and it, like, it kind of opens the dam, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're causing fumbles and you're getting, you know, turnovers left and right? Obviously, that's what we want to see. But, you know, for what this defense is, despite the, like, kind of the things that we still want to see from them when we get nitpicky, the defense is still giving you a fighting chance. They're still giving you an opportunity. So at an overall standpoint, this team still is very much so trending in that direction of playing proper complementary football, you know, where offense helps defense helps offense, and obviously special teams.
Yeah, and real quick, Sam, I'm glad you brought that up, because I just wanted to touch on it before we wrap everything up here. But it, again, for the third week in a row, and maybe it's just because I'm so used to kind of it being a unit that has really struggled, but you can't say enough about special teams. You know, Spencer makes the only field goal attempt that he had. And then, man, Jack McAllister, again, just has a night. And I believe he was named one of the, I think they call it the Ray 8. For his performance, he had three punts, including a career long 68 yarder, but averaged 54.3 a punt, including two that went inside the 20 yard line. So, you know, it's just nice to see them being a strength and not a weakness.
Yeah. Oh, no, Odom talked about it, I think, going into the season. He talked about, like, the amount of time they were spending on special teams, and he always makes it a point to mention them, because I think he understands too. He knows the value of your special teams unit, whether that's the field goals, the punting, it's the kickoff unit. Like, you have to be sound there because they will have an impact on the game as well. I saw the last punt that he had. It was a boomer. And then obviously, you know, got a nice bounce as well. But yeah, man, I mean, the special teams continues to show up. And again, you're going to need that. Like, again, when you're going in these matches, especially where you're probably the lesser talented team, or, you know, the more talented guys, I would say, are, uh, you know, are on the other are on the other team, everybody at like you need to be buttoned up on in all three areas, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. You need to be to be buttoned up there to really to again put yourself in position to be able to win games. And so, you know, shout out to special teams. Also shout out to the leaping call that USC got.
Yeah. We will take it. But like to your point, like special teams isn't an issue until it's an issue. Right. And right now it's a real strength. And so hopefully they can build on that. And you know, hopefully the team can, even though it was a loss, can build on this. And we'll have much more when we look ahead to the preview episode. But Sim, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about something a little more positive. And that is the volleyball team. And man, did they have a weekend, highlighted with the big win against number 10 ranked SMU. They finished with a 3-1 win over them. And I believe it is now their seventh win in a row. I may double check that. I can't find it now. I believe it. No, I'm sorry. They have won five in a row, including two top 15 victories. But man, like Sim, I think both of us, and I'm, you know, in the volleyball preview podcast that we had, I was probably the most optimistic of us all. And like, even myself with us sitting at 7-1, I don't think anybody really saw how well this team was going to play out the gates. I think it's a credit to the team. I think it's a credit to the coach, because it's not like they've just been out here playing cupcakes. Like, they've really challenged themselves, and man, have they answered the call.
Yeah. And especially too, after they had a couple of like, what was it? I forget who they played in the first game, but I'll try to find it.
South Florida.
They played South Florida. South Florida, but like took them to five. And then South Florida took them to five. And then even against Tennessee, that was cool. But like, you know, there was a little like they were kind of, it was kind of a rocky, no pun intended. It was kind of a rocky finish at the end. And then, you know, they turn around, they lose to Georgia Tech. And it's like, okay, like, is this the start of what a down year looks like? And then, you know, they take again, Bowling Green takes them to five, and that was kind of surprising as well. But the way that they've bounced back since then, you know, sometimes you have to win ugly, but nonetheless, like a win's a win. And then to turn around and then beat Kansas in five. And yeah, these ladies are, they're streaking right now. And you know, that match on Sunday, which, side note, the fact that it wasn't on TV is really unacceptable, but that's for another time. But, you know, SMU takes the first set and then Prue's just like, all right, that's about enough. Next three, bam, out of here. You know, you look at the stat sheet and they outplayed them. There's no other way to say it. They outplayed them. And yeah, so to be sitting here now at 7-1 and seemingly for the time being having kind of addressed maybe some of that rough play that we were seeing earlier, I kind of want to go back to something I've heard Dave say about like how these girls, like they're like best friends, they really like each other, and how like they've just been really trying to get along and enjoy playing with each other. And I think that's showing itself. I think that's why they're being able to even in those tough moments, they're still able to kind of be able to figure it out because of that. So it's just, yeah, just really exciting for them, really excited for them, and happy for them, and hope that they're able to kind of continue this, because they're going to get in the conference play soon. And as we all know, it will not get even a little bit easier once we get into Big Ten play.
It will not at all. But they have really responded well. And you know, they got us. I know, at least me, just super excited to really see what they can do. And they will close out the non-conference slate this weekend. Starting with a match in Muncie on Friday. You can catch that match at 7 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus. And then the last game of the non-conference slate, they will finally return home for a match against IU Indy on Sunday at 1 p.m. So shout out to them. Now ranked 11th in the country too. And Sim, we kind of joked when we did the preview one, like, it just seemed like they were kind of, it seemed odd that they kind of were not ranked where we're used to seeing them being ranked. And now, like, seeing them ranked, you know, dang near top 10, it's like, okay, all right, this all may, you know, this makes sense now.
Right, we might be back. Yeah, it's just one, you know, win by win. I know you and I have talked about this before, like when it related to like basketball. But at a certain point, man, winning takes care of all that. So, you know, if you're not ranked where you want to be, okay, well, if you keep winning, eventually the ranking takes care of itself. So, you know, the ladies continue to keep their head down and obviously kind of try to build on this, continue to build on this momentum that they started up. And in due time, they will be ranked at where we remember them to be. And then also, I saw the time for the Ball State game is actually, it shows 6 o'clock Eastern. So I don't know if that's what's going wrong or right.
But to your point about the wins as well, just one last thing, like, not only are these like impressive wins now, but these are really big resume building wins come the end of the year too. And it just feels like they're setting themselves up for a good seed come the end of the year.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. Yeah, the more you win, and especially in these big matches like that, I imagine that SMU and the Kansas wins, those will age well. Those should age well. So, you know, you're able to get a few more of those. I know we talked about that in the preview episode about like how they have some stretches in the Big Ten season where, you know, they're going to play like 2-3 consecutive like ranked teams consecutively. You know, you're going to need to kind of be able to steal some of those ones. And obviously, as this team continues to play better, they might be the ones that are like, nope, we're just belt to ass in all these ones, which, again, I'm down for, you know what I'm saying? Because why lose when you can win?
Yeah. So good luck to the ladies there as they wrap up their non-conference slate this weekend. And that'll do it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for their continued support, all their interaction. Really enjoy all the interactions, especially on game day there. So thank you, everybody, for that. We will be back later this week for a preview episode against Notre Dame and get ready for the big matchup this weekend in South Bend. So be on the lookout for that. But most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.